Hello, this is Dr. Susan Kolb with Simplest Health Radio Show, and today we're pleased to have on Dr. Christian DeQuincy, who is a professor of philosophy and consciousness studies at JFK University and dean of consciousness studies at the University of Philosophical Research, founder of the Wisdom Academy, and author of several books, including Radical Nature and Radical Knowing, and a novel, Deep Spirit. Today we're going to be interviewing him on my favorite subject, consciousness. His new book, Consciousness from Zombies to Angels, is one of the most complete works looking at the history of consciousness and specifically the relationship between spirituality and science, and trying to look at this from not only an historical but a logical, rational, and intuitive viewpoint. We're very happy to have him today. How are you doing today, Christian?
Well, very good. Thank you. Look forward to our conversation.
Yes. The entire title of your book, Consciousness from Zombies to Angels, The Shadow and the Light of Knowing Who You Are. Obviously, you've done quite a bit of work in your own self-awareness journey in order to be able to write this book, which is actually quite unusual coming from the world of academia, is it not?
And particularly from the world of academic philosophy. I would consider myself not to be a typical philosopher, in particular because not only do I value the power of reason and logic for investigating the world and our relationship to the world, to me it's also crucial that we include other ways of knowing, for example, feeling. And so in many ways, my project in philosophy is to integrate head and heart, to have philosophy be as much about our feelings as well as our thinking. So we have to recognize the value of feeling and intuition as well as the value of reason and logic and language.
In your book, you describe the major split that occurred when the church was threatening the scientists, burning some of them. Would you like to talk about that split? Because I think that's a good place to start to understand how we got where we are today, where we've become used to worshiping science as our God, or at least some of the academic community seems to do this.
Yeah, well, it's a long story that really goes all the way back to Plato.
Mm-hmm.
But the major split really occurred with in the 17th century with René Descartes, when he split the, at least theoretically, but in practice it's also had some very profound effects, mind from body, spirit from matter. And part of his reason for doing that was just a generation or so before him, another philosopher, Giordano Bruno, was burned alive at the stake for daring to question the authority of the church.
Mm-hmm.
So Descartes, he decided that, you know, there are really, this is back in his time, there were two major sources of authority for understanding and for accepting what is real about the world. The first one was scripture, Christian scripture, and the second was the philosophy of Aristotle,
mm-hmm.
Plato's pupil. And Descartes basically decided that, you know, I didn't want to just take my knowledge on faith and trust in what other people are telling me, whether it's the Bible or whether it's Aristotle, that I want to find some way of establishing some certainty that's not based on the authority of others. And so after a long process and a lot of meditation, he came upon his aha moment, which he expressed in the famous phrase, I think, therefore I am.
Right.
And basically, he realized that the fulcrum for his new science was the recognition that consciousness is the one certainty that exists. That to deny consciousness or to doubt consciousness automatically demonstrates that it exists, because only a being with consciousness can engage in the process of doubting or denial. So he recognized that consciousness is the fundamental certainty that the new philosophy could have. But he also recognized that consciousness being non-physical, and he spoke about it in terms of soul rather than consciousness.
Right.
That this was the domain of the church. And given that what had happened to Giordano Bruno not too long ago, he decided that I'd better be careful here. So he came up with a very brilliant strategy, and he basically said, okay, so what we'll do is decide that on the one hand you have the material world, and on the other hand you have the spiritual world, the world mm-hmm. of consciousness. And he defined the two domains as the physical world was things extended in space. So matter was defined as anything that occupied space or took up some volume of space.
Mm-hmm.
And consciousness or soul or spirit was not had no extension in space and was what he called thinking stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so by introducing this split between extended stuff, matter, and thinking stuff, soul or mind or spirit or consciousness, and deciding that that the new science would focus on exploring the domain of the extended stuff, the stuff that exists in space, in other words, matter, and then leave the non-extended thinking realm to the church, he was able to avoid the Inquisition.
That's right. And as you so aptly point out in your book, once you've made that split, you can no longer, within the realm of science, study consciousness.
Well, yes, and then the problem becomes that as soon as science decides that all we're going to focus on is exploring the domain of physical things, of objects, which it has done for the past 400 years,
mm-hmm.
pretty much since Descartes, when it comes to the final frontier of science, which is now consciousness, that methodology of looking for consciousness in the physical world is no longer going to, it's not going to work, because consciousness is not an object, it's not a physical thing. Science has developed its methodology based on using our senses and technological extensions of those senses, instruments like microscopes and telescopes and so on. But none of these can ever detect consciousness. Consciousness is not physical, it's not measurable, it's not quantifiable. And the entire methodology of science is based on a combination of sensory empiricism, which basically means the only data that we will consider valid are the data that we can gain through using our senses, and particularly the senses of sight and touch.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot see consciousness, you cannot touch consciousness, you cannot measure it. And so science is now left scratching its head trying to understand, well, how do we then have a science of consciousness? And so far the best they've come up with really are two substitutes. The first is neuroscience.
Mm-hmm.
Says, well, we can't investigate consciousness, but we can study the nervous system and the brain, which they've been doing and doing remarkably well. But that's not consciousness. Studying the nervous system and the brain is not the same as studying consciousness. And then the other substitute is cognitive science, which essentially is a way of using computer modeling to model some of the processes that go on in thinking and thought. But again, that's not studying consciousness. It's studying computer models. Science is stuck in the dilemma of... it's a very interesting dilemma, because every single piece of scientific evidence begins as an experience in
mm-hmm.
some scientist's consciousness. But that very consciousness itself is not open to investigation by science. So what that means is that science cannot establish the validity of its own scientific method. And to put it simply and a little bit crudely, is science turns out to be unscientific. That's a major challenge for science to deal with.
Yes, but it's kind of the nature of the cosmos that we live in, isn't it? That there's these things circle around on themselves, and you have dilemma within dilemma. In any case, the theories that you had gone over in the book were very interesting to me, as we had interviewed Dr. Amit Goswami and Irvin Laszlo and other authors, but especially those two. And would you mind reviewing some of the theories of consciousness and how the scientists start off, of course, thinking that the consciousness comes out of the mind or the brain, or the mind comes out of the brain.
Yes.
And you go through that, and that I think most of our listeners understand why that can't be. But then you go on to describe the other theories, and if you could just give a synopsis of the theories and how you get to the conclusions that you reach in the book, I think they're absolutely fabulous.
Well, yes. Did you want me to talk about the theories of Evan Laszlo and Amit Goswami, or the...
Well, just sort of the evolution of your study of this, how you concluded that you had some logical conclusions based on after analyzing what Dr. Goswami was presenting, and then you went on to Laszlo, and then you went and you took it a step further, I believe.
Well, yes. Now, one of the interesting theories that Evan Laszlo has produced is the recognition that we need to include information as part of the understanding of reality,
mm-hmm.
that it's not just energy and consciousness, but there's also information. And I think he makes a very good point. And what I write about in my book is that one point where I differ from Dr. Laszlo is that I don't think that the fundamental nature of reality is a trinity that he calls information, consciousness, and energy,
mm-hmm.
ICE, the ICE theory. I don't think information is as fundamental as consciousness or energy. And the reason for this is that information requires energy and consciousness, but neither energy or consciousness requires information. I don't want to get too technical, but essentially mm-hmm. information requires patterns in energy that are then detected or perceived by consciousness. So we need both the patterns in energy, some difference in energy needs to happen for information to exist, but that's not sufficient. We also need to be able to perceive the patterns in energy. So it's the reading or the perception of the patterns or the changes in energy that accounts for information. And so information, in that sense, is really a derivative of consciousness and energy. Now, one of the interesting points that philosophy reveals in our investigation of consciousness is it has a lot to do with language. And the language that is used, interestingly enough, both by the materialist scientific world, but also by the more spiritually oriented New Age community, both tend to use the language of physics when talking about consciousness. I call it energy talk. So, for
mm-hmm.
example, it's very common to hear people using words such as vibration, or field, or a current favorite is non-local, non-locality,
mm-hmm.
As people look for, quote-unquote, the mechanisms of consciousness. Now, these are all terms borrowed from physics. And physics, as we've just mentioned a moment ago, is about mm-hmm. the physical world, about things extended in space, about objects. But consciousness is not an object, it has no extension in space. It is not a mechanism. And so using the language of mechanism, the language of physics, is a kind of physics envy,
mm-hmm.
using words such as energy to talk about consciousness or vibrations or fields or frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
These are all terms that are very valid for the domain of physics, but they're entirely inappropriate for talking about consciousness. So there's a kind of unconscious reductionism that takes place when people use energy talk when talking about consciousness, unwittingly reducing consciousness to the physical world, to matter, which completely misses out on the essential nature of consciousness, which is subjectivity, the ability to feel, the ability to know, the ability to have experiences. So we need to stop using energy talk when talking about consciousness. And when I mention this to students or to an audience, I frequently get a question that says, but if we give up using the language of energy when talking about consciousness, we're going to have to invent an entirely new language. And that kind of surprises me because I realize, no, we already have a very, very rich vocabulary for talking about consciousness. Words such as intention, attention, desire, feeling, experience, purpose, meaning, and on and on and on. And none of these words can be reduced to energy talk, cannot be explained in terms of energy or frequencies or vibrations or non-locality. So I'm proposing that we don't succumb to physics envy, and we begin to cultivate using the very rich language we already have for consciousness, and we talk about consciousness in terms of its own language, such as feelings and intention and attention and so on.
So with consciousness being proposed by Dr. Goswami as the ground of all being, and then again in Laszlo's theory as the, you know, primordial field from which the meta-universes emerge, do you feel that there is a field's not a good word, I'm using the physics again.
Yes.
Okay. Do you feel that there is a concept of consciousness as that which is in the void, as that which is yet unmanifested?
Yes, I do. And I don't think I completely answered your earlier question about how my conclusions might differ from Dr. Goswami's. There are really four major worldviews that attempt to account for reality, for the relationship between the physical world and the non-physical world. And they are dualism, we mentioned Descartes, materialism, idealism, and panpsychism. And idealism is the view that ultimate reality is reality is ultimately composed of spirit or consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exact opposite of the materialist view, which says that ultimate reality is composed of purely physical stuff, matter or energy. And so Dr. Goswami is a philosopher, a scientist in the domain of idealism.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes the position that ultimate reality is pure consciousness. And he very ingeniously then relates that to his work as a quantum physicist.
Mm-hmm.
Where I differ from Amit, and we're very good friends, we've had many conversations about this over the years, is that I don't think that it makes sense to say that the ultimate nature of reality is pure consciousness or pure spirit, because if it is, then we have the problem of accounting for the material world. And idealism has only two options if it's going to account for the material world, for the world of physics. The first is emanation, which basically says that pure spirit, in a kind of step-down process, emanates or diffuses the material world. But the problem there is that if you begin with pure spirit, there's no way to ever coherently and fully explain how you get real matter out of pure spirit. So recognizing that problem, there's another form of idealism, which is called Maya idealism, and that says, no, there is no real matter. Matter is just an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very robust and actually irrefutable position to take, because we cannot step outside of the mind or outside of consciousness to show that there is a physical world, a material world that exists independent of consciousness. But that worldview encounters another problem, which is called a performative contradiction, that everyone who claims that matter is just an illusion, certainly everybody that I know and everybody that I know is unable to come up with any evidence to contradict this, everybody that I know who claims that matter is an illusion lives in the world as though matter is very real. They wear clothes, they live in houses, they avoid cars in the freeway, they eat, they drink.
And they don't walk through walls.
And they don't walk through walls, exactly. So people who claim that matter is an illusion have no option but to live in the world as though matter is real.
Right.
So their performance contradicts what they claim. Essentially, they don't walk their talk.
Right.
That's not to criticize them. They really have no option but to do that. So recognizing that there are problems with dualism and materialism and idealism in accounting for the relationship between the physical world and the non-physical world, I turn to the fourth option, which is called panpsychism.
Mm-hmm.
And basically that takes the position that ultimate reality consists of both matter and mind, of consciousness and energy. And you never have one without the other. So the notion of pure spirit, of pure consciousness, if that were the case, it would mean that nothing could ever happen, because for things to happen, you need energy. So a world of pure consciousness would be a world where the divine creative ultimate could have all the best intentions literally in the world, but could never manifest anything, could never do anything, because there is no energy. So the ultimate must consist of both consciousness to create the intentions and energy to be able to manifest the intentions to make something happen. And so
But you could still have your void as beyond that, you see. Both could come out of the void, could they not?
Well, they could come out of the void, provided the void also has some trace of both of those. The idea of
Can't go into the void to find out, can we?
Well, we're probably always in the void. It's just that we don't notice it.
Right.
And there's a deep relationship between the manifest world and the unmanifest world, and that's one of the really interesting descriptions that comes out of the books of Irvin Laszlo, particularly the Akashic Field, the Akashic Record. Finds in the Akashic Field, that there's this constant interflowing between the unmanifest world and the manifest world, that the manifest world is constantly being replenished by the unmanifest and then pours back into the unmanifest world again.
When I had my discussion with Laszlo, it was from the standpoint of explaining the anomalies. Because any theory of everything is going to have to explain all of the anomalies in the world, including reincarnation, clairvoyance, you know, spontaneous remission. Any anomaly you want to name has to be explained by the theory of everything. And he did a great job. It was really great.
Yeah, he's doing some really, really good work.
He is, absolutely. So, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Well, no, basically I was just saying that your question was about, is it possible that consciousness and energy can come from the void? And I would say that only if they already exist in the void. If by the void we mean true nothingness, true emptiness, then there's no way that anything could ever come from nothing. And that seems to be just a basic fact of logic, that if you truly have nothing, if there ever was a time when there was nothing, then there would always be nothing. You don't get something from nothing.
Right.
You know, if your bank account is zero, you don't.
Yeah,
you know. So there always had to be something. And what I write about in my work, in Consciousness from Zombies to Angels and in my other books, is that there are really two certainties that we can have. And they're not death and taxes. The first certainty is that something exists. Something must exist. That's a given. We know that to be the case. The other is that whatever exists must also possess consciousness, because we have consciousness and we exist. And the only way we can have consciousness is that whatever we are made of must also possess consciousness. And so in the panpsychist view, the phrase that I use and others have used is that consciousness goes all the way down. So no matter at what level of the physical world we are investigating, are interested in, there's some level of consciousness there too. So Our bodies have consciousness. Our cells have consciousness. The molecules in our cells have consciousness. The atoms, the subatomic particles, the quanta, the quarks, or the superstrings. Whatever lies at the very fundamental basis of physical reality must have some trace of consciousness as well. Otherwise, if there ever was a level below which there was zero consciousness, then we'd have the mystery that's called in philosophy the hard problem of explaining how it is that wholly mindless ingredients, atoms that don't have any consciousness at all, or molecules that don't have any consciousness at all, could ever produce beings that do have consciousness. So consciousness cannot come from purely mindless precursors, purely mindless ingredients. Whatever has consciousness must also be made of ingredients that have consciousness. So consciousness goes all the way down. There never was a level in physical reality, there never was a time in the cosmos when consciousness did not exist. So a fundamental difference between my position as a panpsychist and Amit Goswami's as an idealist is idealists would claim that consciousness is the ultimate nature of reality. It is primary.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I say, rather than saying consciousness is primary, I say consciousness is primordial. Consciousness is coextensive and coexistent with energy. We need both. We need both energy and consciousness to create the universe, to create a cosmos.
So, I'm borrowing a term from physics, but what you are sort of describing is a field of consciousness that it permeates everything, multiple sheaths of consciousness that go through everything.
Well, yes, and you're quite right. You are, again, borrowing the language of physics when we talk about a field of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult not to do that, because what we try to do when we talk and when we think is we have, at least many of us do, have a natural inclination to come up with some kind of image.
Right, and I was trained as a scientist, obviously.
Yes. And so if we try to picture consciousness,
right,
we actually cannot picture consciousness, because every
mm-hmm.
picture is a picture of some object.
Right.
And consciousness is not the
it's
picture.
It's like a quality. More than a...
It's not
an energy, it's a quality.
It is what sees the picture. Consciousness is what perceives the picture.
Right.
It is not the picture, it is not the object. So consciousness is what perceives or feels
mm-hmm.
or is aware of the field, but it is not itself the field. The field is energy.
Right.
And patterns in energy, which are
mm-hmm.
information once they are read by consciousness. Consciousness is what knows. I often quote the bumper sticker that I think I include in my book as well. The bumper sticker is, consciousness knows, energy flows.
Mm-hmm.
Consciousness is what knows or feels or is aware of the flowing of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had people come up to me and they say, but I've had a Kundalini experience and I can feel the rush of energy flowing up my chakra system. And isn't that consciousness? And I usually say, well, just stop for a moment and pay attention to the words you have just used. You have said, I feel the rush of energy up my chakra
mm-hmm.
system. Your feeling is your consciousness. The rushing of the energy is the energy.
Right.
You're not feeling consciousness rushing up your chakra system.
Mm-hmm.
You're feeling the energy. Consciousness is what feels the flow of energy. And it takes some, I think, some practice and discipline to nudge ourselves out of the rut of using energy talk
mm-hmm.
When talking about consciousness. So, as you noticed a moment ago, when we think of consciousness pervading the cosmos, consciousness, there's no aspect of consciousness, excuse me, of the universe that doesn't have consciousness,
right.
We're very inclined to come up with some image of
a field,
universal field. What I'm saying is that, yes, there is a universal field. It's a field of energy, but the energy comes with its own intrinsic consciousness. Energy
mm-hmm.
tingles with the spark of spirit.
Right. And as you so aptly point out in your book, that this has nothing to do with human consciousness. Humans are a relatively late addition in evolution.
Oh, very much so. That's another distinction that I often have to make, and I'm glad you brought that up, is when I talk about consciousness, I'm talking about it everywhere, at every manifestation, at every level, not just human consciousness. Human consciousness is just, as you said, just one manifestation of primordial consciousness. We have consciousness in all other animals and plants, mm-hmm. single-celled creatures and bacteria, in molecules and atoms. Everything that exists has to also possess its own degree of consciousness. Otherwise, we cannot account for the fact that we have consciousness. We as human beings, we're made of atoms and molecules and cells, and we have consciousness. Therefore, mm-hmm. whatever we are made of must also have its own degree of consciousness. Otherwise, we're back to the hard problem of explaining, if there is some level at which there is no consciousness, how on earth did consciousness ever emerge from purely mindless ingredients?
Mm-hmm. And thus also, if we have consciousness going down into ourselves, there's also consciousness going up into the higher spiritual worlds as well, the realm of the church, so to speak. The consciousness of the higher realms exists just as the lower realm.
Well, yes. Yes, consciousness exists all the way down and all the way up. And so one question that I often get when I say that consciousness and energy always go together. Consciousness is always embodied. Mm-hmm. There's never any free-floating consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And people often question me then. They say, but what about an out-of-body experience? But I've had an out-of-body experience.
That you still have a body in your out-of-body experience.
Exactly.
It's just
a
lighter body.
It's a subtle body, exactly.
Right, right.
So subtle bodies have their own consciousness, mm-hmm. but the consciousness is not the subtle body.
Right.
There is subtle energy. In other traditions, it's called chi or prana mm-hmm. or mana. Subtle embodiment, just like physical, gross physical embodiment, also comes with its own ability to know and to feel with its own consciousness.
Right.
So the same distinction applies whether we're talking about the gross physical level or the mm-hmm. subtle levels, the astral levels, or whatever levels might be beyond those. There's still some degree of embodiment as well as consciousness.
I have a ghost in my spiritual center that at least 40 people have seen. I've seen on one occasion.
Yeah.
I've been there over 18 years. That can write on the walls. That's pretty good. That's a subtle body able to influence physical matter.
Right, right.
That's quite a trick, I think.
I think it is a trick, and yet my sense is that that's what's happening all the time with all of us, that
mm-hmm.
That the, of course, modern science is just exclusively focused on physical energy, but it makes a lot of sense to pay attention to the cosmologies of other traditions mm-hmm. that propose a continuum ontology, an ontology or a cosmology, a description of the world that includes multiple levels of reality, and the physical, the material, is just one level. It's usually in the perennial philosophy, it's referred to as the mm-hmm. great chain of being.
Right.
And one of the more simple variations of that has four distinctions, four levels. There's the level of embodiment of matter, the level of the mind, beyond that is the level of soul, and beyond that is the level of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a constant process of involution and evolution taking place that spirit is constantly informing the level of soul, which mm-hmm. is the level of subtle embodiment. Soul is constantly informing the level of mind, the level of intellect, and intellect is informing, mind is informing the level of the physical world, the level of embodiment.
Yes, last night I was rereading Alice Bailey's Initiation, Human and Solar, and that is exactly what that book is about.
Yes, yes.
And basically, we have within our great libraries all of this information. It just, you have to use your own consciousness to guide you to the correct information at the correct time.
Yeah.
And it is a journey, one of exploration, And it's an amazing journey because in it you have the ability to understand the transformations that can occur. And that's the other part of your book that is very, very helpful, I believe, is the definition of transformation and the actual more detailed information about what a spiritual transformation is.
Yeah. Well, transformation is a fascinating topic, both as something to think about, but even more so as a practice. And in my book, Consciousness from Zombies to Angels, it's really building up to the final chapters, which talk about transformation. And we have to use our four gifts of knowing to cultivate a transformative relationship with the world. And our four gifts of knowing include what I call the scientist's gift, the gift of the senses. So we use our senses to observe and interact with the world around us, the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, we also then have the philosopher's gift, the gift of reason and logic and language. And we use that gift to understand mentally, in terms of reason and logic, the relationship between our bodies and our minds, the relationship between consciousness and the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
And those two gifts, the scientist's gift of the senses and the philosopher's gift of reason and language, are really the only two ways of knowing that are focused on in our educational system and in modern science. But in addition to those, we also have other ways of knowing. We have the shaman's gift, which is the gift of feeling,
mm-hmm.
and alternative states of consciousness. And beyond that, we then have the mystic's gift, which is the gift of intuition,
right.
accessed in sacred silence. And what I'm proposing is that we really need to restructure our educational system to include all of these gifts, not just the gift of the senses or the gift of reason, but also the gift of feeling and the gift of intuition. And also the gift of alternative states of consciousness, which is the one that's likely to be most controversial in a society that is very reluctant to acknowledge and engage in practicing and cultivating alternative states of consciousness. In fact, they are not only avoided, they're in our current society, they in many ways are made illegal, but certainly pathologized.
Sure.
And in many cases made illegal. We need to change that. We need to recognize that. And I use the word alternative states of consciousness rather than altered states of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Because the phrase altered implies that there's some natural baseline, which is, and the implication
right.
is that that's, you know, ordinary waking rational consciousness. I prefer to use the term alternative states of consciousness, which doesn't privilege or preference any particular state, but recognizes
mm-hmm.
that we have this spectrum of states of consciousness that we can employ depending on the particular objective we have in mind. And so what I'm encouraging people to do, and what I write about in my book, is to not only cultivate all of the four gifts of knowing that we have, the scientist's gift, the philosopher's gift, the shaman's gift, and the mystic's gift, but to also know when it is appropriate to use which gift in which circumstance. So transformation is essentially it's an experiential event in somebody's life that reorients our entire access of relationship with the world around us, and it's not a one-time event. It's something that happens from moment to moment to moment. It involves a process, what I call experience beyond belief, that we need to get beyond believing and thinking about who we are and our relationship with the world around us, and turn our attention to our experience rather than to our beliefs. So I spend a lot of time in my book distinguishing between a belief and an experience, and between a belief and intention. We know that there's a current slogan or cliche in the New Age movement is that you create your own reality, or that what you believe is what is real. And I don't think that that really holds together. As a philosopher, when I look at that statement that our beliefs create reality, I recognize that beliefs actually never create anything. What is a belief? A belief is a thought. Mm-hmm. It's a collection of thoughts that we have.
It's a limited thought,
yeah,
actually.
Well, and, yes, and every thought itself is limited.
Mm-hmm.
Every thought is a frozen fragment of consciousness.
Right.
A thought is, it's a moment in the ongoing, ever-changing stream of experience. It's like a snapshot. We pluck a moment out of the ongoing stream of experience, and that's a thought. Thoughts are these frozen snapshots of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So we collect these little snapshots that are our thoughts, and then we create montages. We put them together into different patterns that we call belief systems or ideologies or theories,
mm-hmm,
or philosophies or religions. And they're all made up of these collections of thoughts, but every thought, if we think about it, every thought is always about something in the past,
mm-hmm,
because experience and reality are always in that moment now, always happening right now, but right now is over as soon as it happens and is replaced by a new moment of now. So experience and reality are constantly flowing into the new moment of now. But every thought, because it's plucked, it's a frozen fragment of some experience that happened some time in the past, whether it's just a moment ago or a lifetime ago, or indeed back to the Big Bang 13.7 billion years ago, every thought is rooted in the past,
mm-hmm,
and therefore it's missing out on the current moment. So if we want to access reality, the open sesame to knowing reality is in our experience.
Mm-hmm.
If we think about it, when does consciousness happen? It always happens right now.
Yeah,
when
right.
does reality happen? It
mm-hmm.
always happens right now. And I think that's a divinely convenient coincidence, that reality and experience or consciousness
mm-hmm.
always happen together right now in this moment. So for transformation, to cultivate transformation, I'm suggesting is that we cultivate experience beyond belief, is that we pay attention to our experiences rather than to our thoughts or our belief systems.
And the other thing that you point out in your book that's so important is through the process of meditation to get to the point where you can motor around in the now with a mind that is not thinking, but is rather open to receive information, is critical, because when you are on transmit all the time, you're not receiving anything. And I think that I think one of the great gifts of meditation that I found is that the majority of the time I'm not generating my thoughts. I mean, I'm not thinking
yeah.
about anything. My mind is blank and able to receive information from higher levels.
Well, that's so true. One of the benefits and insights that practicing meditators realize sooner or later is that as we observe what's going on in our minds, the thoughts that are flipping across the screen
mm-hmm.
of consciousness, at some point we recognize that I am not the thinker of my thoughts.
Right.
That my thoughts are happening, and that who I am at the deepest level is whatever is witnessing those
mm-hmm.
thoughts flitting across the screen of my consciousness.
Right.
And so we are not our thoughts, and we're also not our feelings. And by feelings, I don't just mean emotions. I literally mean the sensations in our body.
Right, the gut feeling.
Yeah.
The feeling in your heart.
The gut feeling, but literally also the feelings of our breathing, the feelings
mm-hmm.
if we're sitting down, the feelings of our butt on the chair,
mm-hmm.
of our feet on the floor, of whatever winds might be wafting through and tickling the hairs on our skin. Just pay attention to the feelings that our body is constantly
mm-hmm.
picking up from the world around us. This relates to what you were saying a moment ago about us being receivers,
mm-hmm.
is that our bodies are literally antennas for picking up messages from the world around us.
Especially danger.
Danger, but also inspiration,
mm-hmm.
intuition.
Right.
I suspect that there's a large somatic component in the intuitive process. That intuition.
Yeah, there is, because when I practice medical intuition, and you feel within your field what is happening within the patient.
So our bodies are picking up constantly picking up messages from nature, and by nature I don't just mean the natural environment of our beautiful planet,
mm-hmm.
but I mean ultimately the entire cosmos. So our bodies are constantly in communication, ultimately, with everything that's going on in the cosmos. They are communicating messages and meaning. And I talk about our bodies as meaning processors.
Mm-hmm.
And what tends to happen, particularly in modern society, is that we no longer are trained to pay attention to what's going on in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not noticing the deep, deep wisdom that our bodies have available if only we would tune in and pay attention. And the wisdom of the body is the wisdom of the relationship of our bodies with the embodied cosmos,
right.
with the embodiment of nature itself.
The consciousness field that we decided not to call a field.
and consciousness, yes, consciousness in our bodies
mm-hmm.
is sharing the meaning of the consciousness in other bodies, whether
right.
it's the bodies of other people, the bodies of other animals,
mm-hmm.
of plants, of the body of the planet itself, or all the way out to the cosmos. Our consciousness is sharing meaning, is participating in the meaning that is being communicated by these other bodies around us.
Well, we're coming up at the end of our hour. Would you like to give some contact information?
Well, yes, people can contact me through my website, which is deepspirit.com, and I have another website, thewisdomacademy.org, and my blog is thewisdomblog.wordpress.com, and if people wish to contact me by email, they can do so from my blog or from either my website.
And I'm looking at your website now. You have your book, Deep Spirit, Cracking the Noetic Code. Would you like to say something about this book?
Well, yeah, thanks for that. It's a novel, but it's a novel that's also based in reality, that's based in fact.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to call it, it's a true novel. It's a novel about the evolution of consciousness. And essentially it begins with the recognition that sometimes evolution gets it wrong, and that we've got one last chance to get it right.
Timely topic.
and so basically what I've done in that book, in Deep Spirit, Cracking the Noetic Code, is essentially put into a story form all that we've been talking about in our conversation
Great.
Here today. But it's wrapped up, it's packaged in as an adventure story that is essentially a seven-stage journey on the path of the evolution of consciousness.
Well, I would love to have you back on the show to discuss that book.
Oh, I'd love to come back and talk with you again. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, it's been great. This is the Temple of Health radio show. We've been talking to Dr. Christian DeQuincy about his book, Consciousness from Zombies to Angels, one of the most complete books on consciousness that I've had the pleasure to read. And we have a few announcements for next week. We will be interviewing Joseph Chilton Pierce on his book Spiritual Initiation and the Breakthrough of Consciousness, and then Dr. Norm Shealy on his DVD, The Medical Renaissance Period, The Secret Code, on the 4th of April. And Laura Kamm, Unlocking Your Intuitive Power, on the 11th. Dr. Daniel Benor, 7 Minutes to Natural Pain Relief, on the 18th. And on the 25th, David Riley, The Soul Purpose. We've just last night, or two nights ago, had a Noetic Science meeting, and we will have another Noetic Science meeting on Thursday, April 16th. That will be, our guest speaker will be David Raley, and he'll be speaking about The Soul's Purpose, a book about life path. And if you'll join us about 7 to 7:15, the presentation will begin at 7:30. If you'd like any more information on the radio show or the meetings or our plastic surgery and integrative practice, please call us at 770-457-4677 or contact us on the web at www.templeofhealth.ws. I think we're close to the end of our hour. And again, Dr. DeQuincy, I want to thank you very much for joining us, and we'll be in touch to get the Deep Spirit book and get you back on to discuss this book.
Well, thank you, Susan. It's been a great pleasure speaking with you today.
All righty. Take care, and we will talk with you next week.
Okie dokie. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Don't you just hate trying on bathing suits? Wait a minute. You look great. Plastic surgery?
Not surgery. I got an endermology treatment from the experts at Plastikos.
What's endermology?
Endermology is the terrific non-surgical treatment that Europeans have been using for years to tone skin and contour the body. Endermology by Plastikos feels great, and you can see the difference it makes.
No kidding. Who do I call?
Plastikos, a leader in plastic and reconstructive surgery, is the number one center in Atlanta offering endermology. For more information and a complimentary consultation and treatment, call Plastikos at 770-457-4677. Plastikos Endermology Skin Toning and Body Contouring, 770-457-4677.
So you had plastic surgery. What was it like?
It was great. Don't get me wrong. It was surgery, but the doctors and staff at Plastikos were terrific.
Honey, you look like $1 million. You actually went to Plastikos and had it done.
Why don't you? Plastic surgery is outpatient, and you'll only be out of work a few days. I love what Plastikos did for me, and looking my best is an investment that pays in so many ways. The help you get from the professionals at Plastikos is a bargain.
Plastikos, 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available, 770-457-4677. Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.
You had plastic surgery, Bill?
You bet I did. I got tired of the wrinkles around my eyes and decided to have Plastikos do something about them.
But I didn't think men had plastic surgery.
Get with it, Bob. Men want to look their best, too. There's nothing wrong with getting a little help from Plastikos to look on top of your game. A lot of guys are doing it, my friend.
Well, I don't know about this.
Look, you see the difference Plastikos made with me. I look better and I feel better. My Plastikos surgery was an investment in me.
So where is Plastikos?
Plastikos is in Dunwoody. Plastikos is staffed by pros who guarantee you personal attention. The Plastikos number is 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.